Geez, that's a catchy tune, isn't it? Hi again, everybody. This is Gene Myers. I'm a student of Shorin-Ryu, Shorin-Kan, Karate and Two-Circle Jiu-Jitsu, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe's podcast. This podcast is being recorded on Sunday, February 11th, 2007, and as always, I'm joined by, the brains of the outfit, Pete Chambeau, who's also a student of Shorin-Ryu, Shorin-Kan, Karate, and last but not least, the brawn of the group, Paul Wilson, who's a student of Shorin-Ryu Kenshin-Kan Karate. Pete, how you doing?
Good, Gene. How's it going tonight?
I'm fine, thanks. Paul, what do you say?
Hey, Gene. Just here doing my push-ups since I'm so brawny.
Well, good. That helps. You know, I'm getting a little too old for the push-up thing, you know. I think all these years of training is really kind of taking its toll on me, and those push-ups are just I think getting to be a thing of the past for me. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, I think that's a great topic.
Yeah, that would make a good topic. Yeah, I'm thinking like back in the day. I mean, when karate was becoming really popular, like what in the 60s, 70s, you know, training was a little bit different then. I mean, I didn't train in the 60s, but I started training in the 70s, and I remember, you know, barehanded, full contact sparring or something like that. I'm glad I didn't continue in that vein, but, you know, I imagine there are people who did, and people who train now, like say in mixed martial arts, you got to wonder where they're going to be in a few years, you know?
When I started training, we trained. I mean, we would do throws on the ground, you know, on tile floor, and that's just, you know, for what is essentially a hobby. But people who are training hardcore, you know, or guys who are training, you know, quote unquote for the street, you know, the pounding that they may be putting on their body now, they're young, and you know, these UFC guys they're young, and they're giving it. Given that they're all, but are their bodies going to be able to, you know, carry it on a long haul? I don't think so.
I remember when I started training in Shorin-Ryu, well, going on 16 years ago now. I had trained in judo for a couple of years, way way back in the day, and our instructor, Renchi Tony Musso, knew that. So I was the designated uki for, I think, a number of years. And anytime they wanted to, you know, demonstrate some kind of a throw, you know, it could be anything from a simple foot sweep to, you know, kataguruma, where they throw you right over your shoulders. And I was their boy. But, man, I can't do that now. I've had rotator cuff surgery on one shoulder. And the other shoulder, I've got an impingement that's looking like it might be another rotator cuff problem. And so I can relate. You know, I don't know how these guys are going to do it, these mixed martial artists, after a number of years. Good thing they're young.
Hey, Pete.
Yeah.
What kind of injuries have you had in martial training, if any?
Oh, just the typical bruised ribs, bad shoulders, bad knees.
Bruised ego.
Bruised ego. Yeah, just, you know, the typical broken fingers, broken toes. Mm-hmm. Nothing big.
That's right. Gene, do you think that the rotator cuffs are directly involved with the martial art training, or just, you know, because your warranty ran out?
Oh, my God, my warranty's run out. I think it's a lot of it has to do with the martial arts training, you know. I mean, after 16 years, and I mean, Pete will tell you, I tend to train maybe a bit more enthusiastically than I should.
Which makes him a good partner to train with.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. But it after a while, it does kind of take its toll. Not for everybody. I mean, it does for me because, you know, maybe, you know, genetically I'm predisposed to these kinds of injuries, and my lifestyle together with my, you know, with my genetic disposition, you know, is has made me vulnerable to these kinds of injuries, you know. But luckily, my knees are still holding up well. There are people who have bad knees from training, especially training on hard floors. Kiyoshi Hurton is one that has some bad knees, and geez, poor guy, you can see him wince sometimes, and you know, you feel bad for him. And he's been training, gosh, he started in the 60s, you know. So I guess it just depends on who you are and how hard you train. It seems like today, and for a while now, there's more emphasis on forms and bunkai than there is on, you know, just get out there and spar hard, you know, and that kind of stuff, at least in the traditional martial arts. You guys think that's true?
Well, oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Paul, we talked a little bit before the show, and Paul was saying how you know, some of the masters are in their 80s and even their 90s and still training, and why is that?
Well, I think they condition their body. Well, you know, the only master that I really know, you know, personally, is Master Kise. And, you know, all the stories I heard about him when he was young was he was a hard man. He fought a lot. You know, people would come in and challenge him. His karate was pretty hard. I mean, he trained hard. He still trains, like, you know, 6 days a week almost. He does teaches a lot of the classes, but, you know, and now, you know, he's in his 70s, and, you know, he can do more crunches than I can. He can do much more crunches than a lot of people can. And now, from when we're in class and all that, and we're doing techniques, and maybe people are going, getting a little too enthusiastic, he's like, oh, slow down, go easy, don't hurt. You know, and I think that's because he learned that even though he trained hard younger, maybe he could figure out this what it was doing to his body, and so he pulled back. He, you know, the story I get is that's the reason why we don't do like San Shin in our training, like the Goju guys do, is because either Master Soken or Master Kise decided that maybe we needed to omit that because it's not good for your body. And, you know, Master Soken was around until he was 93, I think.
That's true. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I wonder if there was, I'm not going to say how long have calisthenics been around, but like the Hojo Undo and that kind of training. I'm sure that in Okinawa they did a lot more of those kinds of resistance exercises than, say, our standard push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, crunches and you know, whatever. I wonder if that has a difference in longevity, because we're really kind of talking about, you know, like Okinawan people.
Well, you know, the Okinawans are known to be like the healthiest people on the planet due to their diet and their lifestyle. You know, there was a big book out, I think, a year or two ago on the Okinawan diet.
Yeah, because of their seafood. But mm-hmm. I wonder how much of it for the Okinawans is tradition. I mean, you know, because they have a history of passing the martial arts down from generation to generation, I wonder if some of the wisdom that's passed down is, you know, don't kill yourself when you're young too much, because you're going to have to live the rest of your life with bad knees. Whereas mm-hmm. the Americans don't have that.
Could be. I remember hearing Kiyoshi Hurton speak of his early training on Okinawa, and I think he said that they did a lot of sparring, and I believe the reason he said that was because Nakazato-sensei said Americans like to fight. So he set him up on a lot of sparring. He said otherwise, class pretty much consists of kata or hitting a makiwara. You know?
Yeah.
So I wonder if the hard sparring kind of mindset was really not so much, you know, emphasized on Okinawa as it was, you know, here in America or in the West.
Now, here's a thought I had, too, that may generate comments and letters. We started by talking about how in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot more hard sparring. Do you think because more women are doing the martial arts now, it's not, you know, it tends to be not so hard on the body.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, that's a good, or kids too.
You know, yeah, especially for kids, because I mean, you know, yeah, you really can't get them in there, and you know, even you know, totally strapped and padded up, and say go full force.
You can't. I don't know.
I guess my question in SNLS is like, do you feel that your training, you know, Gene and Pete, do you figure that your training has changed since you started? And now, especially after maybe an injury, do you reevaluate how you train, or do you just try and get back to the level you were at?
It depends on the injury. If it's a motion injury, I reevaluate. If it's a broken toe or finger, then you just get back in and train. But if it's like my shoulders, it's been deteriorating since I've started. And I modify what I do because of what I can do with my shoulders.
I've definitely changed the way I train. When I started 16 years ago, I loved to throw people and be thrown, and you know, we were doing it on just like a carpeted floor, you know, no mats, and I mean, I didn't think anything of it because I was young and fairly sturdy, but now, I mean, there's no way I'm taking those throws. And if we do, like when I trained with Sensei Ernie DeCaro in Two Circle Jiu-Jitsu, we always get those nice thick mats out, you know?
On top of the mats.
On top of the mats that we train on. So, you know, it's like, it helps. It helps me. But I think I've really emphasized kata more, you know, and working on techniques in kata. And, I'll hit the bag more at home. I find I do that more now than I did when I was, you know, a colored belt, Q rank. I would have to say that I'm less likely to engage in some really big throws and hard type sparring. I'll still spar hard, but I'm not out to, you know, really whale on somebody, and I'm not looking to get whaled on either. But I think I just do more, go harder in kata.
I agree with you, Gene, that we do go harder in kata, but I think, just from my perspective, I think we do more throws now than we did when I started 13 years ago, simply because of we're bringing jiu-jitsu into the dojo. But I think we're learning how to fall better, so that when we do more throws, we're also, everybody, because we're doing it more often and you're in practice, you're falling better. And I think that helps to prevent injuries.
Yeah, it does. But when you randori like that, you know, it's not just it's not just Uki's responsibility to fall safely, but it's Tori's responsibility to make sure that the Uki falls safely.
Yeah,
and
I
think so. You're supposed to, at the moment of impact, you're supposed to pull up just a little bit to help them break their fall.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you wouldn't do that on the street, but you know, you got to take care of your training partner.
But I think in our dojo, with the more throws we do, I think we're all getting better at not getting injured from both ends. Both the thrower and the throwee are doing better because of that.
I was just going to say, I agree with you to a certain point, but I would qualify that by saying it depends on who's doing the throwing.
Yeah. Okay. on Saturday, I had a new student at my school, and so we were doing some of the self-defense techniques, and my first student had never really worked with anybody but me. So, you know, when they first got together, it was kind of I was like, okay, you know, go slow, go easy, you know, if it hurts, say it hurts, you know, and that sort of thing, which, you know, before, you know, like when I started, it was like, grab that guy and do the technique. You know, there was no, you know, working together, there was no, you know, make sure that you're not getting hurt and making sure their technique is working, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that probably adapting the way we're teaching has changed from, I mean, certainly the time that I started, and I'm sure has changed since the 60s. Yeah, and just like you're saying, Pete, we you know, we had techniques that went to the ground, but we never really threw that much. But when I first started, no one really taught us how to fall, you know, and then also how to throw. And so I think that's part of the training is training the Tori to be able to do a technique and be in control of the technique, so they don't hurt themselves and they don't hurt anyone else.
You know, maybe part of this is because the American population, well, the world population in general is aging. And as we all age, we all, you know, just as a group, you tend to want to realize your mortality and want to live a little longer. And you know, when you have a majority of people in their 20s and early 30s, of course they're going to go hard. When you have a majority of people that are training, I mean, look around a typical dojo, that's growing older. And, you know, maybe everybody's realizing that, you know, they don't have to follow the example of their teachers and have bad knees when they're in their 60s.
How much do you think this has to do with, and I'm going to be kind of critical of Western society in general here, but, you know, we kind of tend to want something for nothing, you know, and I think we tend to want to do, like, the least amount that we have to do, exert ourselves the least amount that we have to. And you think that maybe, I don't know, that we're a little softer now than we were back in the 60s. I mean, maybe not physically, but psychologically, culturally speaking, you know, that we tend to, as soon as the shit hits the fan in the dojo and things start going hard, that people don't want to do that and they leave. So dojo owners some of them make a living out of this, say, geez, I got to lighten up a little bit. I can't teach the way I want to teach, so I'm going to have to back off on the intensity factor. What do you guys think about that? And Paul's calling me a pinko now, so.
Go ahead, love it or leave Paul. It, baby. Love it or leave it.
Well, is there any truth to that?
I mean, I think that's spot on, you know. I think there's a lot of people who don't want to, yes, they don't want to work as hard to get to their level as, you know, I think the work ethic of America in general, yeah, has slid. Then this, you know, coming from me who, you know, my motto is if the minimum wasn't good enough, it wouldn't be the minimum. But I think that, I don't think people really want to work quite so hard, but if they work smarter, they can take more time to get there. If they want, you know, if they really want it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you can go hard, you know, and I mean, again, you know, it's the old adage, you know, if getting a black belt were easy or training in the martial arts were easy, then everybody would have a black belt or everybody would be training in the martial arts. It's not supposed to be easy, you know, and you are supposed to, you know, sweat and hurt and you know, that's what kind of separates, you know, true, you know, karate heads, you know, from your just your casual participant. And, you know, but I think that mindset is just kind of pervasive, you know, now, you know, than more so than it was in the 60s. And no, of course, not that I remember the 60s, but, you know, it's still, I think that contributes, you know, I think that contributes.
Well, I'll take a little bit of the opposite view. A lot of times people, like, you take medicine. If it doesn't taste good, it must be good medicine. If it tastes good, it can't be good. Yeah, it can't be good medicine. I think a lot of people, when they do things, it's gotta hurt. When they do an arm bar, you know, they might allow it to go past the point where it needs to go, locking out an elbow. It does to do the technique right. You don't have to feel a lot of pain, a little bit of pressure, and I think a lot of people think you have to feel pain if you're doing the arm bar right.
Well, with all these techniques, you don't resist, but you don't give it away either. You know, your partner has to learn what it feels like to. I mean, initially, when they're first learning how to do it, for example, an arm bar like you're using as an example, you know, your partner has to learn how to apply it to somebody who's, you know, not totally compliant, but who's not going to resist full out. You know, and it's under those conditions that you learn how to do it and do it correctly. And now, sure, you don't want to rip the guy's arm out of his socket. You know, he's your training partner, for crying out loud. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, we can't go soft all the time.
No, but Gene, you've worked with young people, and I have too, where it's almost, you know, and Paul, I don't know, maybe it's our dojo, maybe it's universal. I've worked with young people where I've like done a reverse on their wrist. I've locked out their wrist, and they just look at me, and you know they're in pain, but they don't want to tap out until they're in a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you know, you got to make me hurt bad. You know what I'm talking about, Gene? There's kids like that in our dojo.
That's stupidity. That's not intestinal fortitude or good heart training or anything like that. That's just stupidity.
But that's what I'm talking about. And you know, and when you get to our age, and I probably did the same thing. I waited, you know, I would look at somebody and almost challenge them to make it actually hurt. And with age, I've realized that, you know, it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, when I, you know, match up with somebody, and especially if it's somebody I haven't worked with before, you know, I'll go ahead and say, you know, do the technique. I'll let you know when it hurts, and I'll go ahead and learn to do it. And as soon as it gets pretty close, I mean, I want to make sure they get a good lock on me, or, you know, armbar, whatever it is, and I want to make sure it's going to be effective for them. But I'm not going to let them hurt me. But yeah, you know, you'll get guys that will grab you, and they'll go ahead and yeah, they think they need to whip it on you, and I'll be like, hey, slow down, and take it easy, or you know, I'll scream like a little girl before they get it on me because I know where it's going.
Yeah, but I'm talking about even people that you're doing the technique to that you know will say, you know, it's the old it don't hurt, you know, and they want you to go until you can really hurt them, and then
and maybe too late.
Young kids.
So a lot of that is ego too, you know. Yeah. They haven't learned how to train correctly, you know. They think that, you know, they gotta be real macho or real tough and make themselves look better than you, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is again is stupidity.
Yeah, I trained with some ninjutsu guys that they would hit. I mean, you know, and I'm like, guys, what are you doing? You know, and they're doing like muscle strikes, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, that way you can't lift your arm up. And I'm like, well, then training's over for me because I can't lift my arm up, dummy.
See, maybe I don't know. I've never articulated this, but my philosophy, my feeling is that if you can pull a punch that shows better control, I mean, I would rather pull a punch and hit the person and not hard than to hit them hard. Because if you hit them hard, you're not working on your control. And if you can hit them to the extent where they feel it, but it's not real powerful, then on the street you can control exactly how you do what you want. You don't have to go full force. You can conserve your energy when you're in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
Okay, as long as you don't train like that all the time, Pete. You know, I mean, there are times where you just have to open up, whether it's on a bag... Or on a makawara.
Oh yeah, on a bag or a makawara. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is when I'm sparring with somebody or doing an EPOM, whatever, with some, you know, working with somebody, I consciously try to control the amount of pressure that I'm putting on whatever the technique is, knowing that I've controlled it, rather than going full out and, you know, trying to break a rib or trying to you know, whatever. This way I know how much power I've used and I know how much more power I have. Does that make any sense?
It does. But I just think that you're not, what you're saying is not necessarily what you do. Because again, you're going to fight the way you train. Okay. And if you trained like that all the time, that would be the way you fight. Now that's okay sometimes to do that. And, okay, when you and I work together, you know, we'll go hard, like, say, even in a Yakusoku Kumite. We'll go hard for a while, and then we'll kind of back off a little bit within the same Kumite. Or sometimes we'll do one Kumite really hard, the next one we won't go quite so hard, you know. But, I mean, when I'm working with you, there are times where I'm kind of, okay, I'm giving you, like, three-quarter speed. And then there are other times where I'm actually trying to hit you hard. and you're blocking it.
Yeah.
That's when your eyes open up.
Yes.
But, I mean, you still make the block. Oh, but yeah. If you didn't make that block, you know I'd have an imprint of my fist on your chest.
Yeah.
That's the way you have to train. It doesn't have to be hard, extremely hard all the time. It can't be, because you're gonna kill yourself before long. And it can't be too soft either, because then, God forbid, you ever find yourself in a physical encounter, you're not going to be able to fight. You're going to think that these marshmallow, or I shouldn't say that, but these, if you go half speed or with half intensity, that's going to be good enough. And you're fooling yourself. You got to have a little bit of both. One where you can refine your technique and go easy on your body, and work with your partner and teach whatever, and the other where it's just all out, basically war. And that's what trains you, to get your the ferociousness for when you're going to need it, if you end up in a violent encounter.
Gene, I agree and I disagree. For the simple fact, I train kind of like that way too. I always say when we don't punch for power, we punch for accuracy. So, if you're kind of picking your target and you're picking how hard you want to hit, then I think you have more control and you're not going to fight that way all the time, because you're consciously making that choice to, there's my target and I can hit it. And you can hit it any way you want. Vice, just barreling in there, full speed. No, I agree that, bag work, just laying into a bag, or, if you have targets, kicking shields or whatever, that's important, because you need to feel how full power feels and to know what full power will do. Because, if you don't hit something full power, say you've got a ton of power, but you don't know it, and you hit that heavy bag and it, slides 6 inches to the right, well, then if you are in an altercation and you have a combination and you hit something and it goes 6 inches to the right and you're not used to that, you're going to miss your target on the second punch, if you get what I'm saying. So, yeah, I agree that you need to be able to unleash it every now and again and go full thrust. However, I don't think you're taking it away from your training if you're choosing to pull up half speed or pull your punch because you choose to. And we had a guy who was a brown belt, and I'd watch him punch, and he would do like a three-quarter punch, so his elbow was still really bent, and his wrists were would bend in a little bit. I'm like, what are you doing? And he said, well, we're not supposed to, punch all the way out because we're going to be in close. And I'm like, okay, so but you're never extending. So you're never punching through. You're punching, his arm would almost never leave his chest area, it wouldn't extend out. I'm like, you're not getting any extension. Your power is stopping right at the end of your fist there. And he was like, he looked at me so funny, he didn't get it. I'm like, because you're not projecting. And so, yeah, that was the thing. And so when we would spar, his arms would always stay in real close to his body, and he would never get any good extension, or he never got a good solid punch landed in because of that. So, yeah, I agree with Eugene, but I don't think that if Pete's training the way I'm looking at it, he's still getting some quality training out of it, because he is taking control of that and choosing to strike that way. I'll shut up now.
No, I don't think I was saying that he's not getting quality training. I'm just suggesting that, you preserve your body by training that way, and you preserve your partner by training that way. You can't train that way all the time and expect to be able to defend yourself sufficiently.
Okay, well, I'll go with this. I agree what you're saying. Excuse me. I agree with what you're saying. But my philosophy, for lack of a better word, is with a select few, I go full. When I work with you, when I work with Renchi, I'm forced to go as hard as I can, because that's the way you guys come at me. At least that's what it feels like. But when I'm working with other people in our dojo, I take, especially lower belts, I take that time to work on my accuracy and my control for how hard I want to punch. My feeling is when it comes time to the street, the adrenaline will take care of the rest. Well, to a certain extent. I mean, you can't train full speed with everybody. I mean, and even if, like you said, when you and I, we don't train full speed all the time, there are people that I will never train full speed with because it would just be too dangerous.
That's true. But I mean, there are times where you can go full speed, you know. Now, okay, maybe you just don't want to do it with some people, but they're like, okay, I mentioned the Yakusoku Kumites earlier. You can go full speed in them. You know why? Because your partner knows what's coming, okay? And this gives you an opportunity to, you know what technique is going to come, you know? So you're prepared for it, and whether you can block it or use Tai Sabaki and help yourself to get out of the way that way, whatever, okay, you know what's going to come. There's no reason why, if you know the drill, you shouldn't be going hard. There's no reason you can't be going hard for Yakusoku Kumite, you know. Now, okay, you make a good point. There are some people who don't get that, you know. And with them, okay, maybe you train a little bit differently.
Well, I was going to suggest tomorrow night I'll make sure you pair up with one person I'm thinking of. And with number one, I want you to go full power and see what happens.
What do you think will happen? Don't mention any names, but what do you think will happen?
I think I'll bring a stretcher with me.
Oh.
I think you'll nail him.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Maybe. But, I mean, you get my point, both you guys. I'm not saying that, you know, you can't, you know, train for focus and technique and like that. Okay, that's important. That's just as important as just, you know, having an all-out, you know, adrenaline fest. But, you know, you can't train either way exclusively. It's got to be a balance, you know. And there are times where that, to me, that are just made for, you know, going hard, you know, because like I said, Yakusoku Kumite is one. You know, because you know what your partner's going to do. You know what technique's coming next, and gives you an opportunity to see how good your blocks are, how proficient you are in Tai Sabaki. You know, other times, like say, you know, Jiu Kumite. In Jiu Kumite, you know, you're just sparring, okay, just sparring. There, I don't go quite so hard. You know, not that I'm such a great fighter. You know, but it's like, to me, it's like a kind of a rough game of tag. You know, yeah. I go a lot harder in Yakusoku Kumite or in Bunkai than I do in sparring, free sparring. You know, but I think that, you know, you got to do both. The second way is easier on the body and helps you to focus, you know, and to refine your technique. And the other way is necessary to help you develop your power and the strength of your techniques. Fair enough?
Fair enough. Paul, any comments?
What's that, Paul?
That was Pete. I agree. You have to have a balance, you know. And that probably goes back, I guess, to the main topic is, you know, getting old and is martial arts a game for the young? And no, I don't think it is. I think you just have to have a balance of, you know, if you're doing like, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you can't just sit there and roll and pound and twist arms forever. There's a certain point where you've got to, you know, kind of, you know, maybe I think it's probably maybe when you get into it, because, you know, if you start young and train hard enough that, you know, by the time you get up to a level of when you're teaching and not going so hard, you know, your body is, that's at a point where, you know, your body can handle it, you know, when you're kind of teaching and doing what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think that maybe, you know, a lot of the people that are getting hurt and stuff like that are guys who maybe start a little bit older. And so they're in their prime, you know, martially speaking, because they're, you know, brown belt, black belt, you know, second degree, something like that. So they're kind of in their prime and they're going hard. But physically, age-wise, they're older than they should have been to start.
And on that, Paul, you have the last word on this topic. Thanks a lot, guys. This was interesting. You know, I think we got some good perspective on you know, what we think about how to preserve what's left of our physical skills, you know, in the time we have left to in training, you know. So
our ever-dwindling youth.
Yeah, really.
Okay. And a little bit of housekeeping. We can be reached at karatecafe@gmail.com.
Oh, and we have some forms, too. And the forms are located at www.karatecafe.com. Get on there, start a thread, contribute to threads that are already on there. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks to everybody who has been contributing and for all the emails we've been getting. It's great, and it's great to be back.
And before we go, Paul, another plug for Paul. Paul does have an ever-expanding karate school in Dallas. If he wants to give the Paul, if you want to give the MySpace.
Sure, it's www.myspace.com/KenshinKan, KenshinKan. And we had a new student that started on Saturday, and so now I have a 200% growth since, or 100% growth since it started.
Woohoo!
If you're in the Dallas area and you ever wanted to, you know, check out the martial arts, I'd contact Paul. He's a very knowledgeable instructor. He's very talented, and he'll answer any questions you might have about training in the traditional martial arts, both in karate and kabuto, right?
And if you're already yes, sir. And if there's any martial artists that are out there that are listening, and you happen to be coming in towards Dallas, drop me a line, and let's get together and exchange some techniques.
Okay, and on that note, we're going to sign off for today. We'll be back hopefully again next week with another edition of Karate Cafe's podcast. Until then, I'm Gene Myers.
Pete Shambo.
I'm Paul Wilson.
And thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Good show, guys.